Calling all Swifties and champions of change, Like a Girl Media is rolling out the red carpet for you with our Thrive Like a Girl contest. We're all about celebrating powerful women leaders who inspire us to dream big and push boundaries. And who embodies that spirit more than Taylor Swift herself? Here's your chance to see her live in concert. We're giving away 2 tickets to Taylor Swift's show in London on Saturday, June 22nd. Imagine being part of the magic, all thanks to Like a Girl Media. Entering is easy. Subscribe, share, and show us which episodes inspired you the most. Visit our website or check our social media for all the details. Don't just dream it, be it. Thrive like a girl and make this summer unforgettable. Contest opens globally, void where prohibited, must be 18 or older to enter, no purchase necessary. Subscribe and share with hashtag Thrive Like a Girl and tag us at likeagirl_media for entry. Unlimited entries means unlimited chances. Winner chosen at random after contest closes May 20th, 2024. Will be notified via DM. Make sure your profiles are not private. Check full rules on our site. This is your shot to see Taylor Swift live. Don't miss it. Hello there, and welcome to the Hit Like a Girl podcast. My name is Joy Rios, and on this show, we talk about how complicated the healthcare system is. Essentially, the 30,000 or 300,000 piece puzzle that we're all trying to put together. And each one of our guests comes onto the show to share their piece of the puzzle and essentially where they live within the ecosystem. So help us make sense of the bigger picture. So can you please take a moment to introduce yourself?
Thanks for having me, Joy. My name is Naomi Allen. I am the CEO and co-founder of Brightline. And Brightline is the first national pediatric mental health solution. So we provide virtual care for kids and their families from 18 months up to 18 years of age.
Can you tell me a little bit about your origin story and how you got to be where you are?
Thanks. So yeah, Brightline turns 4 tomorrow on World Mental Health Day.
Happy birthday.
Thank you so much. It's been a remarkable 4 years. About 6.5 years ago, I was the chief growth officer at Livongo. We were in the midst of taking Livongo public. And I was going through a mental health crisis with my oldest son. And it really struck me how hard it was to find high quality care for him. And we live in an area where we have access to resources. Our family knows how to navigate the healthcare system. I've been in healthcare for 25 years. And it took us 9 months to get off wait lists. And it took us like thousands of hours of time just trying to figure out what diagnosis he needed, what type of care he needed. When we finally got him into treatment, we were having to do all of the coordination across these different types of care to communicate to the different therapists and explain what was going on with them. And it just struck me, as a country in the last decade, we have made so many investments in adult mental health. And at the time, 4 years ago, literally nobody was talking about the pediatric mental health crisis and how very hard we make it for families to access high quality care. So that was my story 4 years ago. One of my early investors from Castlight Health, Oak HCFT, reached out and asked if I was interested in starting a pediatric mental health company. So that was a very fortuitous timing and a really great turn of events. I think none of us could have anticipated what COVID would mean in terms of pediatric mental health and the youth mental health crisis, both in terms of increased need and acuity, but also in terms of increased awareness. So the journey in the past 4 years from a tiny little company to where we are now, it's been really tremendous.
In a way, I don't want to say the word fortuitous just because a pandemic shouldn't be that sort of thing, but I'm in the sense of bringing attention and awareness to, you know, the issue. In that sense, it has been a good thing. Can you take us through some of the stats and like what should people know about pediatric mental health?
Yeah, great. I think there's so many things that people should know. And I agree, Joy. I think that we are seeing an increased awareness, thankfully, as a country. You know, what I often say is before COVID, there was already a pediatric mental health crisis. So the CDC says that 20% of kids will have a diagnosable mental health condition at some point in their lives. And most clinicians believe another 20% would actually have some form of mental health need, but there's such a radical shortage of clinicians that those needs often go completely under the radar, undiagnosed, undertreated. So that was pre-COVID. Now, as you, I'm sure, are aware, what we've seen in the last few years is a profound shift in terms of both increased need and prevalence rate across all areas of mental health for youth, broadly across acuity, but 30, 40% increases in depression, anxiety, in loneliness, profound epidemic of loneliness now in our youth. and increased, you know, suicidal ideation, suicidal intent. So we've really seen spikes really across the whole healthcare, across the mental health continuum, across ages. And I will say, you know, to your point around silver lining, perhaps, I do think we've also seen a profound increase in awareness with folks like American Association of Pediatrics now suggesting screening for anxiety for kids as young as 9 years old. So really big shift in terms of increased need, but also increased awareness. And I think reduced stigma specifically amongst adolescents and teens. So we are seeing some positive trends here as well.
I do like that as a general cultural shift that we are having a different conversation around the need for mental health care, because I think decades ago it was very stigmatized, and to now be welcoming it in from such a young age is great. Can you talk about some of the solutions that Brightline brings to the table? Is it the screening aspect, or is it resources and, you know, mental health advisors, et cetera?
Yes, yes and yes. Okay. First, we really believe that we won't be able to really solve our mental health crisis as a country unless we stop being so reactive, right? Today, most insurance companies have very sparse mental health networks of clinicians, and most families cannot afford to pay $200, $300 an hour out of pocket. That's even if you live in an area that has pediatric therapists.
Right.
So half the counties in the U.S. don't have a pediatric trained therapist. 75% of the counties don't have a pediatric psychiatrist. So first of all, some of the solutions we bring to the table are national access to virtual care.
Okay.
Because if you live in a rural community in South Dakota, you literally might not have any resources. And so being able to meet families where they are and provide care to them safely and effectively through virtual care is incredibly important. Then making that accessible in-network. So through Brightline, we've created contracts with national health plans as well as Blues plans, and we cover 70 million families in-network, which means that care is affordable with, you know, a coinsurance, a copay. Families may be paying $30, $40 a session rather than hundreds of dollars.
That's incredible.
It's incredible, right?
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
That
yeah.
almost feels unheard of. It's just like always been outside of what's in-network, of just like, oh, you can take care of your body, but mental health is out of network. So congratulations on that. That's incredible.
Thank you so much. Well, and, you know, I think what we've been really fortunate to see is employers that recognize also that the resources that existed for their employees weren't sufficient, and acknowledging that if your kids are not okay, the employees are not okay. Mental health, even though we call it pediatric mental health, this is family impact, right? If you, my,
100%.
You know, you're only as okay as your least okay child. I say that having three kids that have all kinds of stuff going on. And so you think about the profound impact for the employee as a working parent, where they're losing productivity, their own mental health is declining because they're dealing with whatever their child has that's gone untreated and underserved, right? So there's a huge impact in terms of the employee community. And as a result, we've had 500 employers choose Brightline and added Brightline as a benefit for their employees. So I think that's been a monumental shift in terms of attitude as well.
And then do you provide services for the other family stakeholders?
Yes, we do. So what we don't do is adult-only care, because we think there are tons of companies that are very effective in that. So we don't treat, for example, substance use for adults or things of that nature, but we do what's considered family work. So in service of a child, we also have parent and caregiver coaching. We provide a bunch of programs that are parent-facing. You know, if you've got a young child, maybe it's not appropriate for them yet to have their own therapy, but they've got really disruptive tantrums or really tough externalizing behavior. And so the first line of defense there is really helping the families get some support.
That's incredible. When I think about the virtual care option, I am thinking about COVID. I'm thinking about the screen time. Is it something that is as effective to just be telemedicine or in a virtual setting? Are there other ways that I'm thinking also around kids in general, that they are interacting in other some modality?
Great question. You know, I think that COVID forced a lot of innovation around telemental health. And what we've been able to demonstrate is that you can provide virtual services safely and effectively. And we've published now multiple peer-reviewed journal clinical outcomes reports that indicate that our care is providing safe and effective quality care on par with what you would see in person. And now I think it's really interesting. There are so many studies now coming out that show that we're seeing a sustained use of virtual care, specifically for mental health services, for talk therapy, those types of things. And in particular, there's such an increased need for children and youth and such a shortage of in-person care that we're seeing sustained use of mental health services virtually for kids' mental health. You know, one of the things I love about Brightline is we spend a lot of time saying we're not just a teletherapy or just a telemental health company. We've also scaled a national coaching practice.
Oh, tell me more.
Yeah, so it's really fun. For a lot of times, therapy is very appropriate for families, but oftentimes kids just need like 4 or 5 sessions of like, I don't have clinical anxiety, but I'm anxious about my college applications, or I'm not depressed, but I'm having some sleep challenges that might inch into depression if undertreated. And so about 2 years ago, we launched a set of 20 coaching programs. We've since expanded those, and we have trained and certified coaches delivering those for families. And so I think it's not just about the virtual care for therapy or psychiatry, but the coaching. And then we wrap all that with a really great technology.
Right.
So we always talk about our care being really human-led, but enabled by technology. So we have a few hundred digital interventions and digital assets that families can use alongside coaching or just by themselves. If you've got an audio meditation with a child who has anxiety or a family contract that helps families navigate how to deal with the use of technology for 10 and 11-year-olds, right? So those types of digital supports that can really wrap around that family experience.
I love the idea of a digital intervention. Mm. Like, tell me more about what those would entail. Like, it sounds, just even by saying a meditation or something, I'm like, oh, that sounds really calming.
Yeah. It's fun. I got to use a lot of these with my son early COVID when I was homeschooling him, which was really interesting to actually use our digital interventions. But, you know, what we did when we started the company was we really looked for the highest quality, most proven clinical interventions, and we built a virtual care model around them. So our first clinical executive is a gentleman by the name of Dr. David Grodberg. He was the medical director for the Yale Child Study Center for many years, and he became our chief psychiatric officer. What's great about Yale is they've innovated all of these ways to reach families, very highly effective care, and we use the same protocols that they used in person, but we built a virtual solution around them, which means a lot of the interventions that you would use in person, things like fear thermometers, exposure therapies, clinical modules.
What's a fear thermometer?
Fear thermometers are a great way to talk to your child about how they're doing, right? If you're trying to help reframe, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy and reframing, you first have to get kids to be able to talk about what's going on for them and putting that fear in perspective, right? So I'll give you an example with one of my kids. When we were about a year into COVID, he had a lot of clinical anxiety. He couldn't leave my side. He was very nervous that we were going to have an earthquake. And while he was in the bathroom, so he did not want to go to the bathroom by himself.
Very specific.
Very specific, as anxiety often is for kids. And so the fear thermometer would help put his fear into perspective, right? So how many times in his life had we had an earthquake while he was in the bathroom,
right?
And, you know, relative to other things that would feel like small fears that were reasonable to be anxious around, versus bigger fears and kind of how relevant they are. So fear thermometers are a way of really helping map out what's a small fear versus a bigger fear, and then the likelihood of that fear actually coming to fruition, right? Of that thing that makes them anxious. And so it's a start of a conversation that clinicians or coaches can have with kids and families, but it's also a tool that parents can use. And so creating digital supports like that, that can really wrap around that CBT framework.
That's incredible.
Thank you.
That's just an incredible framework. And it sounds like it would be beneficial for adults as well.
It's the same concepts, yeah. But how do you make it really approachable? I mean, I think one of the things that's interesting is, you know, adult care and pediatric care are just not the same thing. As we like to say, you know, children are not just small adults. And so you have to take these big, lofty frameworks like CBT, but break them into really consumable bites for kids and make them approachable and understandable and use, you know, pediatric examples. And obviously when kids are adolescents and teens, you can use the more kind of mature frameworks. But I think so much of the work we've done is really figuring out how to create that cognitive behavioral therapy framework, but for kids as young as 6 years old, which is really remarkable.
That is it. So I also am curious about the loneliness factor of just how do you address that in a virtual setting? I'm sure it's possible, but like, I would love to learn more.
You know, I think one of the things we're working on that we really believe is important, especially for adolescents and teens, are different modalities. So teens today really do gravitate to the idea of near peers and communities. And I think especially for topics like loneliness, for younger kids, even topics like social anxiety, And for parents and caregivers, topics around how to parent effectively. For example, we have a coaching program, which is for parents that have a child that they believe may be on the autism spectrum. Mm-hmm. Those are parents that are going through tremendous challenges and change. They often feel very lonely in their journey. And so one of the areas that we're innovating on is how do we create community constructs and group constructs to really support navigating these challenges with other people that are going through something similar in a moderated way, in a way that's facilitated by a coach or by a therapist. So really excited about that work and just bringing communities together that are kind of tackling similar challenges.
And the way that you had, you know, touched on it earlier, that it's sort of through employers at the moment. So is that, would you, if I was having community created for me, would it be with other people that I work with?
That's what's awesome, because we span so many geographies in such a large swath that we can actually create those programs, but they don't have to be with somebody you work with, right? And that's what's really nice is, if you think about today, if you're going to go to a group coaching session or a group therapy session in person, the chances of running into somebody in your own community, or the chances of your child, you know, being in a session like that with another, you know, soccer buddy or whatever. And so through virtual care, you can create so many more different options that give them that privacy, that sense of community in that cohort, but doesn't necessarily have to be with that really close connection.
So where do you see this? I mean, it's been 4 years, a lot has happened. Where do you anticipate you'll be a year or 5 years from now? Maybe that's too far in advance.
No, they're both really fun to think about, aren't they? I think a year from now, one of the things we're very, very excited about is we have a pretty massive expansion happening in Q1 of next year, which was announced yesterday here through Health. So we have historically been an offering for employers to provide to their employees, but we're now moving into the public sector. So the state of California has contracted us to provide services for kids 0 through 12 for everyone in the state for free. Which is so game-changing. Can you imagine?
That's amazing.
It's amazing.
Wait, starting when?
Starting in January.
Wow.
Yeah, any kid under the age of 12 and under will have access to Brightline coaching and all of our digital constructs for free in January.
This feels very impactful in the sense that it has nothing to do with where their parents work.
Nothing to do with their parents work or insurance coverage, uninsured, yeah. Medicaid, multilingual. Kids on Indian reservations, like all these kids, all of a sudden the state is paying for them to have access to Brightline, what we call Connect, which is our digital platform, and coaching. So really a game-changing contract that we think will just radically change access for families. We are also launching that in multilingual support. So the first time there'll be a Spanish-speaking pediatric coaching platform, which we're so excited about. I mean, gosh, just like, it just gives me chills to think about the families that are in communities that have nothing, literally nothing. So really, that's what's happening for us in January. So we've got a lot of work going on around that right now. And we do think that it paves the way for other government, state, local, counties. We're in quite a number of conversations with other states, because I think that they are recognizing that we can't just provide access to therapy and psychiatry. There's literally not enough of those clinicians to go around. So how do we think about more orienting towards preventive care, wellness, well-being, and really getting ahead of the problem rather than the way we've been so reactive as a country?
So does that make the payer Medi-Cal?
No, it's a direct contract with the state, actually.
Yeah. Okay.
So specifically not around the Medi-Cal, Medicaid structures, because of in California, that's very complex.
Yeah.
And so the governor Newsom stood up a funding mechanism to just directly contract with a handful of entities.
I cannot wait. That is so fantastic to hear. And I can't imagine like how impactful that is going to be for communities all across the state, and hopefully other states can model it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for that. We're super excited. So that's what's going on right now.
There's 1 year. We're just taking over one state in 1 year. Okay.
You know, if I throw the ball out 5 years, our vision is to create what we call the family behavioral health home, which is the idea that you start with really young kids with a preventive wellness screen. You have an annual screening for mental health rather than just parents not knowing what's going on and waiting until a crisis. So we believe that every family should have access to a free mental health screening, at least by middle school, right? At least by middle school, we should be identifying, ideally earlier. But the problem is, because there hasn't been a place to send those kids historically, mm-hmm. because of the gap in supply on services, nobody screens, right? Very few places screen. And so we think that we can actually scale effective mental health screening and then help provide the supply, because we can send kids to different types of care depending on what their needs are. And so doing that proactively and then monitoring them and then giving them support over multiple years. Like if I think about my oldest son, for whom I started the company, you know, he had a crisis at 5, we stabilized him, COVID hit, more anxiety, stabilized him again. And now he's been going through stuff this year, right? And so over the course of 6.5 years, we're now on our third journey with him for his mental health. And when I say that with his permission, he's very supportive of me sharing his story. But, you know, that's not unusual. Kids need a place where they can go that ages and grows with, that treats not just an individual child, but maybe their siblings and their parents as a family unit, because families are comorbid, but they share stuff, right? If you've got a kid with a mental health crisis, you've got other kids, they're probably struggling as well. So we really believe in creating a platform that is wellness oriented, also has clinical services, that's proactive for an entire family, and delivering that across a different set of modalities so families can access it how they need it, paid for ideally by the government,
right,
and by insurance companies. So,
okay, so you touched on something. As a female founder and businesswoman who is inspired by your own experience, how would you frame the importance of having more women leaders to address these types of problems? And like, when we think about, you know, why is it important to have diverse people at the table where decisions are made? I think you're making a case very clearly about what you care about and what you see and what you're motivated to, what problems you're motivated to solve.
Absolutely. And I would say not just women leaders, but systemically. Yeah, this is my fourth startup, and I've been in healthcare 25 years and the startup community 15. It's not surprising that my funding source came from a VC firm that I knew 12 years before. And so healthcare is so complex. You need to have not just women leaders, women executives who can raise substantial funds of venture money or other types of funding, because these problems take years to unlock. And so I really believe it starts with the funding community. It starts with insurance companies that are willing to innovate. It starts with employers that are willing to drive innovation. But a lot of it is, these are such hard and intractable problems that having a class, a generation of female executives that can fundraise, you know, I look at like the Kate Ryders and the Mavens, right? She's like leaders, Jenny Schneider, a dear friend of mine, with Homeward, right? Like, there's a class of women executives now that are getting substantial venture backing, and that just gives you the money to go solve really big problems. And so I think, you know, what the shift that we're seeing in the last 5-6 years is towards that funding community, where there's a number of, you know, very tenured VCs that either have been funding female founders or are females themselves, and are willing to put big checks into companies that are women-led. And that's a sizable change in terms of the type of problems that women executives can solve. And I think women healthcare executives have been seeing these problems, but haven't had the tools and the mechanisms by which to solve them in the past.
Yeah. I mean, I still hear that stat that the funding, only 2% of funding goes to women. I'm like, I would really like to make a dent in that. But I'm really happy that even 2% is going, and that you're doing good things with that amount of money.
It's getting better. I think it's getting better. It's you know, it's a big journey, but you know, I think certainly in healthcare versus my husband's in fintech, and I think that the gap there, I just see, you know, I see like what those industries look like, and it's, you know, I do think I see pockets of glimmers of hope in healthcare at least.
That's good. I like to ask, if you could wave a magic wand, which you're doing a lot of really amazing things with your work, but if you could wave a magic wand and solve a problem, what would it be?
There's no problem I care more about solving than the problem we're solving right now. So this is it. This is the magic wand problem for
you're
me,
doing
I guess.
It.
Yeah, I think for us, you know, certainly there are things that I wish systemically were easier. For example, we have had success in our health plan negotiations with getting plans to be supportive of coaching. It's tricky, right? There are different, you know, kind of barriers to rolling that out nationally. There's barriers to full support. There are barriers to payment for assessments and screenings, right? So the types of things that are part of our big, bold vision are just hard to manifest through the complexity of the healthcare ecosystem. So we are in it to be here for making impact and change for many, many years. But, you know, certainly it's a big series of challenges to overcome, and it takes time.
Well, I am excited to follow your journey.
Thank you.
If people want to support you, connect with you, or follow your business journey, where would you direct them?
So we're active on social media at Hello Brightline. That's our handle. And, you know, always welcome people to sign up for our newsletter. Also, we have a newsletter on hellobrightline.com. People can join and learn more.
Lovely. I love the name, because I do feel like you guys are a bright line out in the world. So that's great. Yeah.
Thank you. You know, that name came, we spent a lot of time really thinking about what we wanted families to feel. And when you're navigating, trying to figure out what's going on with your child and you are just feeling so overwhelmed and confused, we wanted to create a line of sight to a brighter future. This idea that there is hope and there is a line of sight there, you can get there, right? That's the bright line. It's a path to something that is hopeful and on a path to something that's a journey for families.
I love that imagery. That's great.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for taking the time to talk with me today.
Appreciate it. Great to be with you.
Thanks for listening. You can learn more about us or this guest by going to our website or visiting us on any of the socials with the handle HitLikeAGirlPod. Thanks again. See you soon. Again, thank you so much for listening to the Hit Like a Girl podcast. I am truly grateful for you, and I'm wondering if you could do me a quick favor. Would you be willing to follow or subscribe to this podcast, or maybe leave us a rating or review? Or if you're feeling extra generous, would you share this episode on your Instagram stories or with a friend? All those things help us podcasters out so much. I'm the show's host, Joy Rios, and I'll see you next time.